FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Bucciales, no call! Score!
Salamini for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket! Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes! And Zic!
Miljevic.
Stop it! Beautiful ball!
Here's Mazanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Shake it up, baby, now, shake it up, baby. Twist and shout, twist and shout. Come on, come on, come on, now, baby, now. Come on, baby, work it all out, work it all out.
Colours are red, white and blue.
Great song.
Yep, yep. Good afternoon, good evening, g'day. Welcome to another episode of The Pioneers on FNR, Football Nation Radio. My name is George Danikian and my co-host is George Kotsanis. Hello, George.
Good evening, George. How are you?
I'm very, very well. We're just reflecting and I suppose basking in a fabulous Socceroos victory. And on the subject of Socceroos, we've got not a Socceroo, or is he a Socceroo? He's an Olympian. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. But each week on The Pioneers, what we gently do is dig into the lives of some of our most respected footballers, whether they be coaches, players or officials, and we reminisce. They're people who have graced the game, male or female, all people who have made a difference, and we've enjoyed them. Tonight, we're going to introduce you to
My good friend, Ted Smith.
Yep, yep. He was born in Melbourne, fell in love with the round ball, first playing for the Preston Tech Old Boys. Can you believe that? His talent allowed him to make his way all the way from the juniors right through to the senior team. And then in the early 50s, I'm talking about 1950, he joined a club called Moreland. The rest is history.
Ted, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Great to be with you again. I must confess, I am guilty of having spent a lot of time with Ted talking football.
Yeah.
We do sneak in the old coffee every now and then.
So is he a Socceroo or is he an Olympian?
Technically, no, but he is an Australian international. That's
There's no doubt about that.
And it's not too far away. Next week's the 61st anniversary from the opening ceremony of the 56 Melbourne Olympics. Where Ted
November
was part of
22, 1956. Correct. 61 years.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time, Ted?
I remember it very well. From when we were transported down in buses to the Richmond Cricket Ground, sitting there with a little sandwich and fruit and waiting our turn to go across in a cyclone area into the MCG. Previously at the village, they tried to get us to march in some semblance with a sergeant major, but it was hopeless. And so we're getting nearly into the MCG and I see these young kids. What are these young kids doing here in the Blazer? It's John and Elsa Conrads. And John Marshall was ahead of them and there was 340 of us, so we didn't know everybody. Once we hit that ground, as the last team, everyone else is lined up, as the Grenadier Guards, and I can still feel that day now. Whenever I go to the MCG, I look across to the gap that was there between Richmond and the MCG, and I get the same feeling. It's an incredible thing, and it's incredible for a footballer, because up to then, we were always looked down upon. But one of the things the Olympic Games does. We're all sports together. And we were accepted as such. And sometimes that situation doesn't always happen, even now. But we'll get there because it's such a big game. Can't stop it.
You can't stop it. And you were in Sydney yesterday at ANZ Stadium. What did it mean to you to watch the Australian national team, the Socceroos, do so well?
Well, pardon me. I get to see most of the Socceroo games in Australia because we've had this situation of meeting the Socceroos again. Going back to your question, the term Socceroo didn't come in till we were in Vietnam in the 60s. Mm. And in the early days when we were running functions in conjunction with the PFA, Brendan Schwab used to joke with me, you know, you might be seen as a Socceroo. But because it was made retrospectively and the Olympics were full internationals, that name has been accepted. And
great news.
Like the Olympians too, we're not former Olympians or former Socceroos.
No, you're always Olympians. Fabulous.
It doesn't disappear.
Well, it's like the president of America. They're not the former president. They're always the president. Just marvellous stuff. And it's enormous to think that you can still feel those wonderful emotions all these years later, 61 years next week.
Yes, it comes around quickly. but
you had a pretty good crew.
We had a great crew, and we were fortunate to be on the same field as the legendary goalkeeper Yashin for Russia.
Oh, yes. And Lev Yashin, the Black Panther or the Black Cat, what did they call him? He was marvellous.
We were teed up to play a friendly against them after only being in the village for about 2 weeks. There was no pre-training system. And
what?
You got a letter saying, turn up at the village in 3 weeks' time. And we played the showgrounds. It rained. First half, we get a free kick, and Cliffy Sander takes a free kick, goes through in goal. One up against Russia.
Hello, Australia.
All right there. Half time, 8-1. We changed the team. Everybody was to get a game.
8-1.
Yes.
8-1 down.
Yeah.
Right. Just checking.
And we then lost 15-1. And, you know, it was suicidal.
We should add, the Soviet Union, as it was then, went on to win its first ever gold medal.
Yes, yeah, and a great trivia question. What is the largest crowd at a football match? And it was the final of the Olympics, because it was also the closing ceremony, which was unique at that time. Instead of coming on as a country, everybody were in together, and that has since gone to every Olympic since.
Yes, that became a tradition based on what they saw as the ultimate friendly games in 56, the Australians. Yep. What a great idea. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give us an idea of some of the players who turned up in that original Olympic squad?
Pardon me.
Norm Hodgson?
Norm actually played for Australia later. What they did is they picked an Australian squad which played all the states twice. And I played for Victoria one game. The second game I had the flu, couldn't play. So a couple of weeks' time, I went up to Sydney and played for New South Wales against them.
Okay.
And on the Sunday, I played for the Australian team against Northern New South Wales. And we don't hear any more of that. Previously, selection was very much committee, very much influenced politically by the states. And in our squad of 20, we had someone from every state, West Australia, South Australia, Northern Territory, Tasmania. And unfortunately, what happened in we played several friendly games, and we ended up having to play a midfielder, in today's terms, as a striker, because and the coach didn't pick the team. Len Young didn't pick the team. From there, we played Germany, we played India twice, we played Yugoslavia, and we were going all right, but we got ahead of ourselves.
And it didn't go well.
No, the first game, 2-0 against Japan, and we'd already played India and comfortable with them. And a great lesson for football life is you've got to make it happen. And it was a pity that we lost to India, because what it would have done for the game at that stage, it was a very small game, would have been immense. And it's fair to say, I think, as can happen, players can become comfortable with being at the Olympics and at the Village, rather than, you know, what do we got to do to go further? Because it was a knockout, and we could have been in the semi-final.
If you had been in the semi-final, can you imagine what it would have done to the code? We're talking 1956, before any of the other codes had made any sort of grasp at becoming a national sporting body. We would have had the round ball code, football, as the number one.
Yes, wow. And an example of even then, other codes were concerned about the sleeping giant.
Good to know that they started early getting worried.
They were worried, don't worry about that.
Yeah. There were requests to use a training ground at one of the VFL, it was then, VFL grounds, and was told, you can't have it, you can play in the gutter. And so that was quite evident that sport got lost.
The code wars were alive.
They started early, huh?
Back in the 50s.
Speaking of going back, we're talking to the great Ted Smith, who, as we all know, Melbourne-born, was one of the two Victorian Olympians in that squad in 1956. But where did he start to play? I mentioned early the Preston Tech Old Boys, and he started in the juniors. But we should take him on a bit of a journey and find out a bit more.
Now, you grew up in Fitzroy, but I think even before that, did you? Am I right in saying you grew up in Geelong? Or you were?
Yes, yeah. During the war, I was at Geelong.
Yeah,
and a Geelong follower, because they disbanded during the war, and when they reformed, we're lucky to win a game. When the game was three. So, again, I tried to have a broad sports interest. Each sport has something for somebody.
Mm.
There was no sign of soccer at that stage.
So I heard you were very good or very capable at a lot of different sports, and you tried a few. Is it fair to say you were pretty good at all of them?
I thought I was all right, but I played cricket at Fitzroy to the thirds. Jack Potter played with me. Eddie Lingworth played with me. Then soccer became a 10-month game with night soccer down at South Melbourne. So, and also with pending Olympics, although I really at that stage never thought I would have a chance. But it was still there.
You were very young.
Yeah, so I gave it away. Basketball came later. Tennis was at school. But in essence, I fluked playing soccer because I used to read all these English comics and books about soccer. There was no television, obviously, although television came at the Olympics. You'd go into a newsreel theatre that on a one-hour rote would have 2 minutes of the cup final, which is how I come to Barrack for Arsenal. But getting Northcote High and kids having a kick around half-time at lunchtime, so you better come and play with us because we've only got 10. So, okay.
So you were the token Aussie even then.
Yeah, that's right. And the attractive thing was I got two sports days. First form, I was playing the senior soccer team, and Thursday playing the house footy or cricket or tennis or whatever it was.
What made you fall in love with the game then? What attracted you, or what was the magic that separated it from the other sports?
I don't know. However, what is strange, in second form, we're asked to do a drawing of our dream. And I'd been playing the game for a year and a half, and I drew scoring for Australia playing soccer. How or why? I have no idea. Yes, I thought I'd be a test cricketer, or I thought I'd be an AFL. But I don't know.
And you just express yourself in a painting or a drawing, and that's what came out.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It wasn't a good drawing, I can tell you. But, yes, I have no idea.
But the expression and what you were feeling, obviously, was... Yeah.
When did Robert Murdoch enter your life?
Bobby...
The great Bobby Murdoch. Mr. Moreland, call him.
Yeah, he came to Moreland when I came back to the club after being playing at Hakoa and coaching Hakoa, and that's about 69. And Bobby had come across then. I was on the committee and then was convinced to coach, which was another story. One of the committee, Alistair Walker, asked me to apply for the coach. I said, no, I won't apply for the coach. Why not? I said, well, if they don't choose me after I've coached the state league team, I'd have to leave the club. But if I don't apply and they appoint someone else, I could stay on the committee. I could still be involved. So out of that, Alistair convinced me and appointed me, if you like. And we had Davey Oxton there and quite a few others. And we did really well. We're playing in the second division, which was won by Preston Macedonia, and Albion Rovers second. So we were a very good local side, but we couldn't jump it.
We're going to take you back to when Bobby Murdoch first called you to play for Moreland in the very early days when you were a young boy. But we're going to take a short break. This is The Pioneers on Football Nation Radio. George Katsanis, along with yours truly, George Tanekian, and our very special guest, the great Ted Smith.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Back. We're on The Pioneers.
I like it.
George Danikian, George Katsanis, and Ted Smith, our guest this week. Also joining us on the line from Sydney, I believe, is our good friend Andy Howe. Good evening, Andy.
Hi, how are we, boys?
We're good, mate.
We're very well. You get around, clearly.
Except that he doesn't get to Melbourne.
He doesn't get to Melbourne. You're coming soon, though, aren't you?
Quick trip there next week. But, yeah, look, a very, very special time to be in Sydney this week.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us tonight. And, you know, we've got Teddy with us.
Hi, Ted. Good to talk to you again.
G'day, Andrew. How are you?
Good, mate. Good.
You two were together last night enjoying a good win at the Socceroos.
Yeah, look, special night. And it's good to see Ted there. I mean, Ted could tell us a bit more, but... couple of events around, taking, respecting our national team, historical figures of the national team at the big game last night. Perhaps Ted can let us know what went on last night around the big game.
Yes. Well, firstly, we've been presenting an individually numbered cap from the soccer person's first game. And this has been happening since 2005. And at halftime, we had three of these to happen, which we've been doing at every match so far.
These are numbered caps.
Yes, yes.
Fantastic.
And I've got 156, which is quite ironic.
156, yeah. 1956. I love it. I love it, yeah.
Good for the numbers man online.
Yes. But as well as that, what was organised was to gather up as many Socceroos as we can, and they're not former Socceroos, to have a guard of honour for the Socceroos as they come out. And I don't know what they knew about that, but it was great for our boys to say, we're behind you, and Ange acknowledges that to shake us all their hands. And we've been having a get-together at every match that the Socceroos play in, and it basically came about when there was a book, Our Socceroos, which you've probably read, and when they were getting the research on that, all the players said, we never hear anybody, we never get together. Neil Wallace kept coming back with this story. And so from that, I thought, I'm a member of the Olympians Club. We should have a Socceroo Club, which we now have with the support of Football Australia. We don't do it as well as other codes to recognise these players and their contribution. But more than that, it's there for some young kid to say, I can be one of those. I took the game up fairly late, but having Joe Marsden playing in England was my inspiration, if you like. And
Preston North End.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
FA Cup final. Mm.
And I, even as a 16-year-old, wrote to Arsenal and said, I'm a 16-year-old inside forward. Could you send me a photo? So I hear nothing. 6 weeks later, I get a card, price list from the photographer of Arsenal. But that hasn't stopped me from following Arsenal.
They're still scraping for money, Arsenal.
Very
back
keen,
then,
very keen. Mm. You could have been a Tottenham Hotspur. We wouldn't have put you through that sort of pressure, Ted.
No.
And there were three caps presented last night at that halftime of the big game,
yes.
They said.
Who was acknowledged?
We got Abbas Said, we had Mark Bridge and Robbie Cornthwaite. And one of the challenges that we have when we try to catch up from the history way back is that the fellows move, change their email, and I've been trying to get Abbas Said for about 3 years. And he's in Malaysia coaching, happened to be in Australia for a couple of weeks and was so pleased and proud to get his cap. And that makes it a bit worthwhile, doesn't it?
Fantastic. What number was Abbas? Can you remember?
He was in the 500s.
Oh, there you go.
I can't recall. We're up to about 580 now.
Okay,
500. And we did put out an APB a few weeks ago for Duncan Cumming.
Yes.
Yes.
Are we getting closer?
We haven't, but we're going to continue and we're going to pester away till we find him for you. Mm. He should get his cap, or the family should get that cap.
Yeah.
So we will continue to search. That's yours, wonderful. Andy?
Yeah, Abbasad, the only Lebanese-born Socceroo there. And it was great, yeah, you finally found Abbas. I'm looking, 387 I can see now. Abbas played his first game for the national team in 1992. So we give the cap numbers based on order of appearance. So starting with number one, which is Alex Gibb, an Ireland-born, Scottish-raised Queenslander.
Wow, talk about multicultural.
Captain of the first Australian team back in 1922. So he's a... number one, and number 591 is Matt Yearman, who of course played in the big game last night. He's really come to the fore this year, in a big year for former Sydney FC player Matt Yearman.
Yeah, it's interesting that Alex Gibb was number one. When we were first setting this up, they were suggesting that in the team formations, goalkeeper number one, blah, blah, blah. So you can't do that. It has to be the first captain that has to have number one.
I don't know. I reckon you can always give the goalkeeper number one. Makes sense.
So, only to the goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. He's tuned out again, by the way. Every time we mention goalkeepers, George Katsanis goes into some sort of fairyland, you know, just vegetates.
And for good reason. Keep going, Ted.
Well, when you talk about goalkeepers, in my first year at Northcote High, those who know me know I'm not very tall. Well, I was pretty small at 12, and I wanted to be a goalkeeper. So, but they didn't.
Everyone aspires to be a goalkeeper except Katsanis.
That's true.
They're there to be chipped, and that's about it.
Oh, dear. You couldn't chip Ted Smith. He wouldn't let you.
No, true.
He'd fake it, go forward, and then just dive back and get the ball.
Fake an injury, probably.
And it's good to also mention, you did mention Ange acknowledged all the players, and I think Ange is well known for paying tribute and acknowledging the history and the players before, and that's great to see. And that was one bit that I did notice on the TV last night.
I haven't seen the TV as to how it was received. I'm not sure, but Ange has traditionally always been when the A League first started. We used to have a little session at half time with people to talk about the game that had taken place, and Ange was one of the ones who did that for us. There was no suggestion he was going to be coaching the soccer crews down the track.
No.
But he did it, as did several others. But it one of those things that disappeared. They didn't see that it was anything that added to the supporters who were there. But Angie's solid. On behalf of the Socceroos Club, we sent him an email last week that we're behind him and always will be.
Fantastic.
And we should be. And anyone who's got one name in the sport, like Ange, and we all know who Ange is just by using his Christian name,
correct,
shows that he has left a legacy and he is well-loved.
Yes, doesn't have to defend himself. Can I just take you back to a ground that you played a lot of football on called Campbell Reserve? And a lot of the international teams that came out for the Olympics got to train on Campbell Reserve. And it was a very special pitch, one that not only looked the goods, but had a fence around it. One of the very first grounds in the city of Melbourne, and it was much appreciated.
Yes, well, I went to the opening of the game when I was 16, the opening of the ground with a fence, and
did it have a cricket pitch in the middle?
It had this turf pitch, which Merry Creek soil in the middle of winter is not recommended, because you just have like a diver's boot because of all this black soil on it. And it was also one of those things when I went back at coach later on at Moreland, you would be saying, "Don't play through the middle."
Don't play through the middle.
Go to the... What happened? Some bloke would go and stand in the middle and be bogged down. And it is now being removed.
Isn't that a great thing?
There's some developments to expand the facilities, including for the girls at Moreland, which is well overdue. And... it's great to see this happening, because with all the clubs disappearing in Victoria, the big clubs, Juventus, JOST, Ringwood,
Slavia,
Melbourne, Hungaria, Moreland, which was a British club, didn't have a great deal of support. It not only survived, it is now back growing again. And it's fantastic.
That pleases you, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah, you were worried at one stage that in the middle 50s or early 60s it may not survive, because the ethnic clubs were really making an impact by buying most of the top talent.
Yes, well, the Moreland team of 57...
That won the Doherty Cup.
The Doherty Cup. We had five players, 21 and under, and three of those eventually played for Australia. And another one played for Victoria.
Who were the three?
Don Hodgson
went
to George Cross. Norm Hobson went to George Cross. Davey Oxen went to Juventus after I'd left to go to South Melbourne, because we knocked around together, all the mates, and they were all disappearing. So the writing was on the wall, so to speak.
What was a good Aussie boy who had spent some time in Geelong? Why? What would drag you to Middle Park to join South Melbourne? It wasn't the colours, was it?
No, it wasn't the colours. There's been a lot of things happened that you can't put any sense to. They just happened. A former client said, "Why don't you come down and play at South Melbourne?" Well, mates were disappearing, and I thought, well, let's go and see. This was a new club that had merged with two Greek clubs and the old Australian club, one of the few, South Melbourne United. And
Theo Marmaris was the one responsible for that, wasn't he?
Yes. If you talk about a peacemaker...
He was the peacemaker?
Yes. To put all those different entities and priorities together... because what had happened with the two Greek clubs is that one of them would get promoted and go straight back down. The next one would get promoted and go straight back down. So it was like, I don't know, volleyball.
Yo-yo.
Yeah, and I don't know whether the internal politics within the Greek community at all.
What, you're telling me your Greek is not that good?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But one of the things which will sound so strange in today's time,
community,
At Moreland, it was a Scottish club. We washed our own kit. We weren't paid, and except when we won a Donkey Cup, got £5. I would go over to South Melbourne United. The strip is all done for you. It's on the hangar.
Fantastic.
Really professional. And it was not too difficult that the rest of the team didn't speak English, but we had one occasion. The coach was Len Young, who was also the Olympic coach, and he would give his British talk about what he wanted done. And
the rest was what, translators?
Well, we had one, John, who was an Olympic basketballer, played for Australia basketball. I only found out later his version was different to the case. So I don't know.
What, a Greek who didn't pass on the right story in soccer?
Oh, there'll be trouble.
That would have been a first and a last.
Let's take a break. You're listening to the Pioneers on FNR. Andrew Howes on the line from Sydney. It's Ted Smith, our very special guest. George Denikian along with George Katsanis. We'll be back right after this.
FNR, Football Nation Radio.
They haven't! They haven't! They might have won it!
The Pioneers with George Denikian and George Katsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Norm Hodgson, when he hit the ball, it stayed hit, didn't it, Ted Smith?
Yes, it was actually Don.
Sorry, Don.
Don Hodgson.
Don Hodgson.
There were two people who had reputedly the best strikes. Was Don Sutherland, an English professional, and Don Hodgson. And I witnessed him. We were at the Victorian Colts together, and he got picked for Victoria to play against Rapid of Vienna. And ball comes out to him, and he smashes it from about 30 metres past the keeper. Wonderful goal. The keeper was Walter Zeeman, who went back to play for the rest of Europe against Great Britain. And I've witnessed Don with many goals like this. Headers, and this is not old memories coming in, where he's above the crossbar and heads the ball down. Fantastic.
Talk about a vertical leap.
Wonderful memories.
Yeah.
Take us back and tell us how you got from high school and how you ended up at Moreland City at the beginning.
Well, I was at Preston playing under-16s, and one of the first team got injured and had already played, and I was asked to play for the senior team, which was surprising because we had two other blokes in the under-16s who played for Victoria. I never played for Victoria as a kid. I went to the trials, rode my bike from North Fitzroy with a lamb sandwich and rode back, but I never got anywhere. Anyway, I quit first team, and from then I was in the first team. And we played against Moreland, who had the dubious honour of winning the Doherty Cup and getting relegated. So they scored 100 goals and came straight back. So they, because I was young, they sort of pat me on the back and encouraged me. So I played another year with Preston in the second division. Then, because we were amateurs, you signed for each year. And I went up to Moreland because these blokes were telling me you should come. No one wanted to know. So this wasn't very encouraging. Anyway, once we started to play a few friendly games, they showed some interest. But I'd already signed a junior registration the year before and got overruled because I was able to sign the senior thing. And so we were at Moreland, and the young fellas accumulate there. There was no real junior plan. We only had a reserve team, and we won a Doherty Cup. And then from there went to South Melbourne, won the State League Championship in 62, and played for another 3 or 4 years.
Tell us about the pay incentive that South offered you, considering you were getting paid virtually nothing at Moreland, if anything at all.
Well, we got one payment, £5, for winning the Doherty Cup. But with South Melbourne, they introduced this system of the players shared 70% of the net gate. If they won, average over two home and away games, 50% for a draw and 30% for a loss. And so in 62, just married with a young child, to get a pay of £300 was very welcome.
Yes, I can imagine.
In relative terms, it's silly for a club to do that. But they were able to raise the money from fellas working in factories, whatever. It was never an issue. And Hakoa, when I went to Hakoa, the Southbourne were rebuilding their team. Johnny Anderson and these fellas came. I was fortunate in two clubs to have played under Manny Poulakakis, who Egyptian Greek, one of the first who had FA license, which he got at the same intake with Bob Robson, who was the England coach.
Oh, sensational.
He introduced 4-2-4, which we knew nothing about. It would be interesting to ask anyone now about the WM system. They wouldn't know.
It's not in the curriculum.
Yeah, that's right.
And, Three from the back, mate.
So Manny eventually comes to Akoa. And up to that time, I'd never played other than in the first team. And Akoa brought out an Israeli youth international, Jerry Charlton, a very good player. And I had my first games in the reserve for about half a season. Never done as a kid. Fortunately played in the Harry Armstrong Cup. The next year, Manny comes there, we would go play a 4-2-4, and we win the Doherty Cup. And the next year, we are beaten finalists by Sydney Akoa, which had Ray Bartz. They had virtually an Australian team, which was my last game.
So it was an Australia Cup final?
Australia Cup final.
Okay, yeah.
So... Yeah, I've been fortunate in being in the right place at the right time. So even the Olympics was a very fortunate experience in that going to the Victorian Colts, along with the coach of Len Young, there was a fitness fellow who had been a trainer at Melbourne Football Club, and he trained professional athletes. And he also introduced weight training. Now, in the 50s, weight training was looked upon as, you'll bulk up, you'll be no good. But Harry Hopman introduced it for the Davis Cup team.
Yes.
And I was doing weight training with him. I was training with his pros as well as at Moreland, as well as I would be kicking a ball up against the broom factory around the corner. Len Young was the first coach I saw at 18. I would sneak out of the house at night from the bedroom at the back and be running up and down the park at the end of our street, dodging the trees. All of this, how did it all happen? I don't know. but by going to Moreland, they initially played me on the wing because I was young, they were protecting me. And I was reasonably quick. And because of that, when I played for Victoria, I played on the wing. I played in the trials for Victoria, Australia on the wing. When we come to assemble at the Olympic Village, the other left winger, Chuka Vogley from Queensland, they'd done no training. I was still training, not because I thought the Olympics was going to happen, but it was the regime I was in. I was basically training 6 days a week in one form
and,
or another.
And held you in good stead.
The results always come, don't they?
Yeah.
And you see, you wonder now at times when teams and individuals don't progress. They all have enormous ability. They think they're there, but they just got their foot on the step. So then I coach Hakoa for 2 years, which is a good record. 2 years at Hakoa. we didn't go to it, but in all of this. Teams.
Yep.
Token Aussie.
Token Aussie.
Token Aussie.
And you mentioned being lucky, being in those three clubs when they were successful. You're too humble to say, but I'll say it. It's no coincidence that you were there when those three clubs were very successful. And I've spoken to guys who've played in all of those three teams, and they speak highly of you and your work ethic and your team ethic and what you brought to those teams. You're not going to say it, but I'll say it because it wasn't a coincidence that you were there when they were successful. You played a big part in it, buddy.
Ted, can I also just reach in before we run out of time? And we're thrilled to have you here. The Pioneers for us is a great opportunity to reminisce with people who have made an impact in the game, who've graced the game and done it with a special elan and energy. And Andy Howe is always there with us, making sure that the stats we provide and offer are as close to the mark as possible. But take us back to 58, when Blackpool came to Australia and a guy called Sir Stanley Matthews showed off just a hint of his abilities at 48 years of age.
Yes, well, I didn't play that match. I watched it. I was at Olympic Park, read an enormous amount about Stanley Matthews, and was watching him very closely. And the thing that I saw was this incredible pace over 3 metres. Crikey, how good a bloke did that? Then he would stop and look up, beat another bloke, 3 metres, cross the ball, goal. And there was a comic rendition of Stanley Mortensen, who played with Blackpool with him. And this game, Matthew's not playing for England, and Tom Finney's on the wing, and he crosses the ball, and Mortensen heads it to the goal. Happens again, they come in the half time, and he says, every time you head to the ball, the coach says, well, you keep holding your head. He said, well, Matthews sends us the ball with a lace facing the goalkeeper.
So there you go. Legend.
I'm paying attention when we're talking about wingers, just a footnote for you.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
I'm paying attention.
Yeah, I'm a goalkeeper, don't care about wingers.
Yeah, and so I go back to Moreland, go on the committee, coach them for a couple of years, and then drop out of football. And that's when I thought, not because I dropped out, but they would disappear, but like some of these community clubs, there's two or three people do all the work, and when they do too much, they drop out. And Manny Poulakakis called me up in 77 to be his assistant, and I was at Hallis for 3 years. I have the proud record of one day I coached when McLaren had pneumonia. 100% won and 4-0 against. Can't be beaten.
Hey,
Andy, have you got that stat? 100% coaching record
like
in
that?
The NSL?
Andy's lost.
Well, we've lost Andy.
We've lost Andy, have we? Well, there you go. Hayden Fox in the A-League has the the best record of any coach.
Five matches.
Undefeated. Don't know about 4-0, yeah. though. Yes. Some of the great stars that made an impression when you were playing at Hakoa or at South Melbourne or at Moreland?
Well, obviously, in the Moreland 57 team, we also had Jackie Wilson, another Socceroo, my mates. Angus Drennan had played at Moreland. And in the Olympic team, there were four Victorians who was chosen politically. Of those four Victorians, two were now current Moreland players, one had played for Moreland. They have a record of enormous numbers. At Hakoa, there was Nestor Reedies. I played against Willie Schroef. One of my claims to fame, when people say he didn't score enough goals, was I scored against World Cup goalkeeper Willie Schroef. He palmed the ball out straight to me by the far post. So.
A beautiful tap-in.
Put it away.
But, it still counts.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Jimmy Greaves famously said, when they asked him...
This is the great goal poacher who played for Tottenham and Chelsea. Scored?
He said, the next one.
The next one. I love it. It's all about attitude. You have a very interesting observation. You made a point about... Ted Smith, being very humble. You have a couple of things you need to add before we finish the show.
Yeah, sure. There was a little interesting story. Your dad watched the two games at the Olympics.
Yes.
But no other games. Is that right?
That's right.
Why is that?
Too busy working?
Well, if you think of it today where the kids are transported everywhere, they have a cricket bag, a shoe. I had one bat. You had to get to the game. If you were playing, he had no influence that I was playing any sport, actually, yeah. other than provide me with a soccer ball at one stage. We got tickets for the games we played in, of course, and they came along to that. I don't know what he thought about it, but it's...
Soccer wasn't his thing.
No, sport wasn't.
Oh, okay, at all.
Yeah.
Hard working. Yeah. Well, we've almost come to that time of the program where we've got to bid you a good evening. But I've just got to want to say, Ted, it's been a lot of fun to have you in the studio. But you want to leave us with something?
Yeah, in just to round this off, part of the involvement with the Socceroos Club has come about because I was asked to be part of the first Hall of Fame committee for Football Australia, which Don Sutherland got me back to the game. That's how I came back to the game. And for about 14 years was on that. I'm in the Football Victoria Historical Committee, and I'm very keen on the great history of football in Australia against great odds. It's not known. It's not known where it is to be found. And along with a lot of people around Australia, doing work to bring this out.
Correct.
Because it's like family. If you don't appreciate where you come from...
You don't know where you're going.
That's it.
Well, we're adding to the archives with the pioneers every week. This week, our delight and pleasure to have with us in the studio the great Ted Smith.
Absolutely. Andy, I think you're still there. Thanks for joining us if you are.
Thank you, Andy. Really appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon.
Yep, look forward to it.
Thanks, George Katsanis, great to have you again, mate.
Thanks, Georgie. Nice
who
being
do we have
you.
Next week?
Next week, Julie Dolan, the number one Matilda.
One. Yeah. All right. Fantastic.
And Tal Karp in the studio with us. Big Matilda special next week.
Thanks for joining us on the Pioneers. George Stanikian, George Katsanis saying good night.
Good night.